This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
You're under the same rules as regular staff.
Several times, no.
Okay. Do you do the officer?
Sir, turn around. Put your body back.
Come on, Mr. Chairman.
What's the decision?
Mr. Chairman, we discussed this before.
This is a public hearing. This is a public hearing, and within my First Amendment rights, and I'm being taken out.
Well, but before the meeting has begun and before the subcommittee has had a chance to discuss the issue, this guy is being led away in handcuffs. I'd like to move that he be allowed to film this
motion,
meeting.
Motion's out of order. We're not in the hearing.
Well, then can you gavel the hearing in before this guy's...
That's at my discretion.
In addition to the fellow who's just escorted out, who I understand was not credentialed, although he's, I understand, filming an HBO documentary, an ABC crew showed up earlier, and they were turned away on the stated reason that they had not requested to film in advance. I think all those rules are to control access where there's limited access. It is very clear that we have space in this room for either of them to testify or to film this hearing. If you claim that rule does not provide, does not allow them to film, or more accurately, allows you the discretion, the majority, the power to turn them away, I move that the rules be suspended to the end, that the HBO, the fellow who wanted to film for HBO be allowed to film this hearing, and that ABC News be allowed to film this hearing, and All God's Children be allowed to film this hearing until the room is too full to conduct our business.
That was Congressman Brad Miller of North Carolina. He is protesting the ejection of the media from a hearing into an EPA study concluding gas fracking has ruined the drinking water of farmers in Pavilion, Wyoming. Miller was overruled by the Republican chair and the media kept out. So much for government transparency. It didn't matter much. The witnesses mostly represented the gas industry anyway. And Obama thinks fracking is great. The Congress didn't hear this story from rancher John Fenton of Wyoming.
I will start right off. Like I said, my name is John Fenton. I farm and ranch in Pavilion, Wyoming. Pavilion area was heavily drilled for natural gas. There was really no consideration given to well spacing or the impacts on the people or the environment. Our land and the land of our neighbors has been damaged and devalued. The water has been contaminated and the air fouled. Our health has also been attacked. My wife is losing her sense of smell and her sense of taste. My youngest son has developed seizures, and I suffer chronic headaches and fatigue. When the people of Pavilion area begin to notice negative impacts to their water, they look to the state and industry to provide answers and help to remedy the contamination. However, there was no help from the state of Wyoming or the natural gas industry. The people of the Pavilion area were told that there was no way the natural gas drilling and fracking operations in the Pavilion area could have caused damage to their water. And when industry did admit that problems existed, they very often blamed the impacts on the landowner, saying that they lacked proper hygiene or that they had contaminated the wells themselves. So for over a decade, the residents of the Pavilion area tried without success to get the state of Wyoming to investigate the problems in the Pavilion area. The state never performed any tests of their own. Instead, they stood behind test results provided by Encana and maintained the position that there was no contamination in the Pavilion area. The water turned black, smelled like petroleum, and bubbled with gas. And we were being sacrificed. The Environmental Protection Agency was approached by the people of Pavilion with concerns of contamination that had gone ignored by the state of Wyoming. And really, we wondered even who in the state had the expertise or the resources to perform the testing that investigation that needed to be done in the area. But the EPA came to the Pavilion area and investigated the contamination. After 3 years of testing and investigation, a draft report was released at the end of 2011. It's clear that the deep zones are highly contaminated, and we fear that the methane is pushing contaminants up into the drinking water zones. Improper casing techniques and improper well construction techniques have played a large part in this, and really as the result of an industry that's under zero oversight. And although the deep levels of contamination in the deep water are extremely high, the shallow water shows a lot of times very low contamination in our drinking wells. Although these constituents that show up at these low levels are still very, very dangerous at the low levels. But even after all this, the findings of the report were immediately attacked by the state of Wyoming and the natural gas industry and industry-friendly politicians. The congressional hearing regarding the EPA investigation in Pavilion, Wyoming is entitled Crack Science. And all this while the people still sit here suffering the impacts and have lately pretty much been forgotten in the political jousting that's been going on.
That was John Fenton of Pavilion, Wyoming. Listen for more coverage on the health impacts of fracking for gas on Radio EcoShock. In this program, you'll hear the voices of Congress and the voices Congress doesn't want you to hear. U.S. Representative Andy Harris, Republican from Maryland, will announce his attack on the EPA study showing fracking poisoning well water in Pavilion, Wyoming. Congressman Brad Miller, Democrat from North Carolina, shows up as the only person to speak out for fracking victims and the EPA. Theo Colburn of TEDx, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, tells you about the choking, toxic airborne chemicals from fracking. The EPA spokesman at this Energy and Environment Subcommittee I mentioned, the EPA Hydraulic Fracking Research, held February 1, 2012 in Washington, was Regional Administrator James B. Martin. His defense of the science was weak, I must say, and as we'll hear in our concluding interview with whistleblower Marsha Coleman Adebayo, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is already weakened from within by persistent racism, sexism, and cover-ups for corporate America. That's a full slate as committee sub-chairman Andy Harris begins and calls repeatedly for transparency. Keep in mind his action before the web cameras were turned on. Harris had Josh Fox, the famous director of the Oscar-nominated fracking film Gasland, arrested.
I want to welcome everyone to this morning's hearing to examine EPA's approach to groundwater research near Pavilion, Wyoming. The increased production and use of clean natural gas is the source of one of the few bright spots in our current economic climate. In 2010, the shale gas industry supported 600,000 jobs, and a Federal Reserve economist estimates that lower natural gas prices enabled by increased production saved American consumers more than $16 billion in home energy costs last year. And, of course, the price of natural gas has come down since last year. So it would be more than $16 billion in home energy costs saved each year from natural gas. Wyoming is a perfect case study. Tens of thousands of people are employed in oil and gas production, and royalties and taxes on that production delivered almost $2 billion going to state and local taxpayer coffers, more than $3,400 for every citizen in the state. However, in a remarkable display of arrogance and disregard for the plain facts, the president, in his State of the Union address last week, proclaimed his support for expanded shale gas production, while at the same time allowing every part of his administration, from the EPA to the Department of the Interior to the CDC, to attack these practices through scientific innuendo and regulatory straitjacketing. In the past year, the subcommittee has held numerous hearings on EPA's use and abuse of science. Time and again, we have demonstrated that this agency is substituting outcome-driven science for rigorous objective science. EPA's investigation of groundwater contamination in Pavilion appears to be yet another example of politics trumping policy and advocacy trumping science. EPA will no doubt emphasize today that this is a draft report that will soon undergo peer review. This fails to acknowledge, however, the impact this report has already had. The day after the draft report was released, the governor of Delaware announced that it was the validation for his decision to vote against development of natural gas in the Delaware River Basin. This illustrates the power of EPA's press release science to drive public opinion and even critical decisions by policymakers. The key question before us today is, was the investigation conducted in a scientifically robust manner that justifies all this potential economic upheaval? I look forward to hearing from witnesses, but I am concerned about indications that EPA's approach in Wyoming has been poorly conducted, unnecessarily alarming, and fits within the pattern of an outcome-driven, regulate-for-any-excuse philosophy at the agency. Transparency is central to getting to the bottom of these scientific questions. Regardless that the president boasts that he leads the, quote, most transparent administration in history, and despite receiving multiple requests from state, media, and interested stakeholders, interestingly enough, it was not until late last night, the eve of this hearing, that the EPA finally disclosed data essential to meaningfully evaluate their findings. Now, note that the original deadline for comment passed 2 weeks ago. Well, I'm not sure how the EPA thought that people were going to make decisions on the adequacy of this study without the information that now the EPA, I guess, feels essential to make those kind of determinations. Now, while I'm pleased that EPA posted 622 documents to its website last night, now I would offer that maybe they should follow the same rules the House has, that you need 3 days of putting something out before you should actually consider it. Clearly, that's not enough time for this committee to take that into consideration in the hearing today. It is unfortunate that this transparency appears only to have been compelled by the calling of a congressional oversight hearing. But then again, maybe that's the purpose of the 112th Congress. Compounding this problem is the complete failure to collaborate with experts and institutions with knowledge in the unique hydrogeology of this region. For example, the state of Wyoming, despite possessing decades of experience in groundwater assessments, was not consulted with about the most important aspects of this investigation. And we'll hear from one of our witnesses today about that. The agency did not even consult with the U.S. Geological Survey before releasing the report, a sister government agency that has extensive understanding of aquifer complexity and geographical characteristics in the region. Also concerning is EPA's apparent failures to follow its own laboratory protocols, Superfund site requirements, peer review handbook, information quality guidelines, as well as U.S. Geological Survey recommendations for drilling and sampling monitoring wells. Hypocritically, these are behaviors and practices that the agency would never accept from any state or private sector entity conducting a comprehensive groundwater investigation. Finally, I'm afraid EPA's actions in Pavilion demonstrate a disturbing loss of perspective. The principal concern of this investigation should always have been the health and welfare of the people living near Pavilion, Wyoming. Unfortunately, in its single-minded pursuit of the hydraulic fracturing smoking gun, EPA appears to have lost focus on identifying the real causes of and real solutions to drinking water quality problems locally in Pavilion, Wyoming. I want to thank the witnesses for appearing before the subcommittee, and I look forward to a constructive discussion. The chair now recognizes Mr. Miller for 5 minutes of an opening statement.
Thank you, Chairman Harris. The stated purpose of this hearing is to examine the methodology, the quality assurance, the peer review process, and the like of an EPA study that links hydraulic fracturing or fracking and groundwater contamination near Pavilion, Wyoming. The principal criticism of the EPA is that the EPA's procedures have lacked transparency. EPA conducted the study in response to requests by citizens in the area. After fracking operations began there, they began to suffer headaches, sore throat, nausea, sinus problems, and other symptoms that are known to be associated with the contaminants found in Pavilion's drinking water supply by the EPA study. EPA, it is a draft report. It's the product of 3 years of research. The report is subject to a public comment period, followed by peer review. EPA has extended the public comment period from 45 days to 90 days at the request of industry. Public comments are due by March 12, 2012. EPA is now soliciting also nominations for disinterested experts to serve as peer reviewers. Real scientists, not members of the science committee, real scientists. Once selected, the peer review panel will have 30 days to complete their work. In other words, the Pavilion study is a work in progress, and all the criticisms we will hear today are part of the public comment and part of the peer review process. The Pavilion study does not call for any regulation of fracking. Their study is part of risk assessment, not risk management. Risk assessment informs risk management. Once we know the risk, EPA will then weigh the economic benefits and potential public health consequences of fracking to determine what safeguards, if any, are appropriate to develop needed natural gas resources while protecting the environment and public health. Although the industry and their political allies dismiss the concerns about fracking as uninformed hysteria, their refusal to provide basic information about the operations, their operations, and their efforts to hinder independent scientific research like the Pavilion study cannot be reassuring to citizens living near fracking operations. The industry has refused to disclose the chemicals they inject into the earth, claiming the information is proprietary, their secret sauce. But the draft pavilion study is not the only study to find groundwater contamination and at least one instance of surface water contamination near fracking operations by chemicals not ordinarily found in nature and known to be part of the secret sauce. Some of the chemicals are known carcinogens. In short, the public concern about fracking seems very reasonable. The question is not whether we are pro-drilling or anti-drilling. The question is whether we will drill with our eyes open. The public wants to know if fracking is safe, and they're entitled to know. But the industry and their political allies just say, in effect, move along. There's nothing to see here. The integrity of scientific research at EPA is properly the subject of this subcommittee's interest, although none of the Republican witnesses today appear to satisfy the requirements of disinterested expertise to serve as peer reviewers. With no disinterested scientists as witnesses, a reasonable question is whether this hearing is really about the science, the integrity of the science, or if it's just a big wink and nod to the industry that the majority is on their side no matter what. I yield back the balance of my time.
This is Radio EcoShock. You just heard Congressman Brad Miller following Representative Andy Harris in a recording from the Republican-led House Committee titled Fractured Science, Examining EPA's Approach to Groundwater Research, the Pavilion Analysis. The witnesses were heavily stacked in favor of the fossil fuel industry. We heard from Tom Dahl from the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. The state makes big money from fracking. Tom Dahl claimed the EPA caused the pollution they found just by drilling two test wells. Even the man-made chemicals must have come from this testing, Dahl suggests. Next up, Ms. Kathleen Sagama, a PR person from the Western Energy Alliance, says, well, mistakes happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Miller and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity today. Western Energy Alliance represents about 400 companies engaged in all aspects of environmentally responsible oil and gas development in Wyoming and across the West. There is no fail-safe process, and accidents may happen with any human endeavor. One of the main roles of environmental regulation is to ensure that the risk is managed properly, that appropriate procedures are in place to prevent public exposure, and in the event of an accident, that problems are corrected. Oil and natural gas producers are held to high scientific standards to ensure operations are properly designed, executed, and controlled. My industry struggles against outrageous information in the public arena and that overstates our environmental impact and propagates blatantly false information about hydraulic fracturing. Every day we hear members of the media and unaccountable environmental groups make statements about supposedly thousands of cases of contamination. Never mind that EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson and most regulators from large oil and natural gas producing states have felt compelled to issue statements about the lack of cases of contamination from fracking. Once misinformation gets out in the public, it takes on a life of its own and is almost impossible to correct. This misinformation has caused local communities and citizens to fear a process that is safe. The fear leads to development roadblocks, depriving state economies of tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of economic activity. Furthermore, unfounded fears about fracking divert limited federal and state resources away from activities that truly pose a threat to underground sources of drinking water. The Groundwater Protection Council considers fracking low risk, especially compared to other threats such as agricultural runoff, septic systems, sewer lines, and wastewater treatment sources. The public trusts EPA to follow the law and use sound science as the foundation of its regulatory work. When EPA releases a report stating that fracking may be the cause of contamination, the public expects that to be backed by science. However, in the case of the draft pavilion report, EPA's own data contained within doesn't support the conclusions presented up front. A conclusion with such broad implications should have first been tested through a scientific peer review of the work. We are left wondering why EPA would jump to conclusions. Why would EPA release the report without state input and scientific peer review? These are disturbing questions to ask about an agency that should have the public trust and points to the fact that EPA is also a political body, not a disinterested scientific institution. As this committee knows, fundamental standards of science include objectivity, repeatability, transparency, and peer review. It's hard to call something scientific if it doesn't include these basic elements, yet we've seen examples from EPA that do not. Industry is particularly concerned since Congress has charged EPA with conducting a scientific study of fracking. EPA's recent actions raise questions in our minds about the quality of the science for the broader fracking study as well. The Pavilion report and what we've observed so far in the fracking study cause great concern to industry as we see a lack of transparency, unscientific methods, and failure to perform peer review. I ask this committee to help ensure that the issues of scientific credibility are resolved. I believe in general that better oversight is needed of EPA science. There's an inherent conflict given EPA's regulatory and compliance roles and its ability to conduct objective science.
That was Kathleen Sagama for the Western Energy Alliance, representing 400 companies in the fracking industry, as she attacked the EPA for claiming fracking had damaged groundwater in Wyoming. Note the Groundwater Protection Council cited by Kathleen Sagama is actually a group of state governments and industry established to sell the public on the supposed safety of deep water injection wells. Fracking uses those injection wells to bury millions of gallons of fluid waste. In 2004, a law was passed prohibiting the Environmental Protection Agency from regulating fracking under the Safe Drinking Water Act. It was a Bush-era giveaway to the industry, which has left Americans blinded to the impacts of fracking on water supplies and the very toxic chemicals used by the industry. What about the impacts of all the volatile chemicals going up into the air? The EPA does not monitor that either. There haven't been any real studies of the health impacts of fracking for either workers or people who live near fracking. And before you say, well, they shouldn't have let the companies in, remember, especially in the West, most homeowners and ranchers don't hold the underground rights. In the case of Pavilion, Wyoming, those rights were held either by the Federal Bureau of Land Management or by Native tribes. Fracking can pop up anywhere and put a 24-hour-a-day well, generators, trucks, and pumps within 400 feet of your bedroom window. It's all perfectly legal, even if it kills you. And gas fracking is booming all over the world, in the UK, in Canada, in New Zealand, Australia, and many more countries. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and here is, as the famous broadcaster used to say, the rest of the story on the air pollution from fracking.
My name is Theo Colborne. I am a professor emeritus at the University of Florida, Gainesville, and also have an honorary doctorate of science from the University of Colorado. I am also president of TEDx, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, that I started here in Paonia, Colorado in 2002 when I found out that my back was not going to let me work in Washington, D.C. Before that, of course, I was operating the Wildlife and Contaminants Program at World Wildlife Fund, and from the very beginning, my work started with the International Joint Commission, and all of my activity has grown out of what we learned about what's going on in the Great Lakes. So I accepted this opportunity from John to speak today in order to bring you another perspective that has been sadly neglected and sort of swept under the rug. Most of you probably do not remember Paul Harvey. You're too young, I bet, who many years ago had a talk radio news program. He called it The Rest of the Story. Well, that is what I want to do today. Tell the rest of the story of what it is like to work and live where natural gas industrialization is taking place. We will look at a major problem that has made it impossible to adequately regulate the natural gas industry and protect public health. The problem is being that the complete lack of air pollution monitoring. And to do this, I'm going to focus on exposure, those who are being exposed, and what the difficulty of providing proof of exposure means to those who work and live where natural gas activity takes place. So setting water pollution aside, what follows focuses on the invisible and oftentimes odorless chemicals that people suspect have made them ill long before the drinking water could become contaminated. We will look at four examples of sources for airborne chemicals that could be causing overt and covert health problems for those who work and live in gas patches. We'll talk about volatile chemicals introduced deliberately. We'll look at exhaust from mobile and stationary equipment. We'll look at hydrogen sulfide under certain conditions and fugitive gas other than methane from underground that I call the sleeper. At TEDx, we spent years putting together a list of products that are used during drilling and fracking to get natural gas out of the ground. This list is available on our website. As we compiled the list of products, we also listed the chemicals that the companies revealed were in their products. There are 980 products on the list. Of these, 421, or 43%, provided less than 1% information about what is in them, and only 14% gave the full formulation. Now, we were able to find the names of 649 chemicals in those products, but only 362 had a specific chemical name, and out of those 362 identifiable chemicals, 36% are volatile, many of which have adverse health effects. These chemicals are deliberately added to the fluids used to facilitate the release of the natural gas from the ground. Here you see the health profiles of the volatile chemicals plotted against the water-soluble chemicals, and it shows the frequency of the chemicals having possible health effects. As you can see, the volatile chemicals were more toxic than the water-soluble. 95% of the chemicals cause eye, nose, and skin irritation, often the first effect workers and residents complain about, as well as sensory organ irritation, the scratchy throat, ringing of ears, rashes, chronic sinus problems, and often headaches. Then moving to the right, we move into the respiratory symptoms, asthma, sinus problems, and flu-like complaints. Then next, go to the right to gastrointestinal problems because so many chemicals make people feel nauseous. And then there is the brain and central and peripheral nervous systems that show up next for 85% of the chemicals. Then kidney, cardiovascular, and blood. And note that cancer drops down to 30%. But then endocrine disruption, which includes reproductive and developmental effects, bounces back up to 50%. Abnormal bone development or outright death are most often associated with the other column. And of course, ecological effects that include wildlife, where in some instances certain chemicals at the invertebrate level are very sensitive at the very low end of our food web. These man-made VOCs used for fracking or drilling could escape during the chemical mixing process for both the drilling and fracking fluids, during injection while drilling and fracking, and then during flowback when the fracking fluids start coming back up to the surface, and especially while the recovered fluids are stored in open reserve pits on the pad or until the fluids are totally disposed of.
In this program, we are looking into a powerful collusion between government regulators and the fossil fuel industry, how it hides the real dangers of fracking for natural gas. Theo Colburn continues with more unreported air pollution dangers in this teleconference for the nonprofit citizens group Great Lakes United in January 2012. Then stay tuned for our interview with EPA whistleblower Marcia Coleman Adebayo.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.